Welcome to the Countdown Podcast. We're reviewing Dune Part 2 for you, and my name is Wayne.
And my name is Usul.
Desert Flaps.
All right, then let's get straight into it for this obviously brand new epic sci-fi continuation of Dune, released in 2021, directed by Denis Villeneuve and written by he and John Spahitz. Of course, based on the famous novel by Frank Herbert of Dune name, and produced by Mary Parent, Cale Boita, Patrick McCormick, Tanya Lapointe, and Denis Villeneuve. It stars Timothée Chalamet.
It's Chalamet.
That one, him too. Zendaya, Rebecca Ferguson, Josh Brolin, Austin Butler, Florence Pugh, Dave Bautista, Christopher Walker, Lea Seydoux, and then Stellan Skarsgård, Charlotte Rampling, and Javier Bardem. It is 165 minutes long. The budget, a reported $190 million. And we are recording too early in the weekend. We'll talk about the box office and what it's taking. But the critic reviews are pretty good, as we'll talk about in a moment. Wayne, what is part two of Dune about?
Okay, part two of Dune follows Paul Atreides as he unites with the Fremen people of the desert planet Arrakis and gets down with Chani to wage war against House Harkonnen, who are the bald people who destroyed his family. So now he's facing a choice between the love of his life and the fate of the universe, and he's trying to prevent a terrible future that only he can foresee.
There you go. That's a really great synopsis. According to the critics, this one is getting buzz all over the place.
Oh, is it?
Including from our friends at the Epic Film Guys, who actually got some of their stuff on the trailer.
So amazing. That's so big. It's baller.
Fucking awesome. 94% of 323 critics' ratings are positive on Rotten Tomatoes.
Holy shit.
With an average score of 8.5 out of 10. And on Metacritic, still harsher as it always is. The 61 critics together there have an aggregate score of 79 out of 100, indicating generally favorable reviews. An audience surveyed by CinemaScore gave the film an average grade of A on the A+ to F scale. So there you go. Some very, very positive words there. They reckon this is going to gross 85 to 90 million in North America on the opening weekend. We're recording until they know that. And then probably around the rest of the world, 65 to 80 in America and 85 to 90 around the rest of the world. So they're saying somewhere around 160 to 170 million it will gross in its opening weekend.
What's the budget?
190. So almost make its production budget back. Obviously, it will need to double that, give or take, to get all the marketing costs back. So let's see and let's hope that it does well. Wayne, what did you think of... Oh, we should actually, before we go any further, say this. You went along to the advanced screening with thanks, of course, to our good friends at Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
Which is Tegan there helping us out.
Very nice.
On that particular one. I couldn't make it, so you went, and then I went and saw it on opening night.
That's right.
The cinema, which was a pretty great experience too. Very, very busy.
It wasn't good. Was it good? Yeah, okay.
What was the advanced screen like? It looked like there was some pretty good photos, pretty sweet setup going on.
Yeah, so they had an entire Dune bar. Very full.
What drinks were they serving?
Unfortunately, they didn't have that popcorn bucket that looks like an asshole, which I really wanted.
That's not a drink.
No, but like they gave like cheese boards, and then it was cocktails of some sort. I'm not a drinker, Paul. It was really cool, and it was full, very buzzy.
Yeah,
we got there early, got some sweet seats.
Nice.
And it was really quite the affair. I thought it wasn't as fancy as your Top Gun Maverick one.
Well, sounds pretty close.
Still pretty great.
Yeah, with thanks to Tegan again from Universal, who was representing Warner Brothers
very
on this
kind.
Particular occasion. All right, then Wayne, what did you think? Without any further ado,
you were
infamously on this podcast.
Yes,
a little down on part one. You didn't think it was that good. You were like, well,
Yes.
Here.
Some of you may remember the heat I took from my review of the first film.
Because you didn't watch it on the big screen.
That's right. So to incur your wrath and perhaps to honor the filmmaker, and more importantly, the medium of film, I've done quite a bit of work here, Paul.
Okay, well.
All right. So one,
to regale us.
First of all, I rewatched the original Dune on a big screen. Right?
That's good.
But I cut it into two viewings, which frankly, I recommend so I would not fall asleep again. So this, I do recommend that. Then I did some research about the whole Dune world and shit, and it turns out that it was written so long ago. 60s, but it's so cool that Frank Herbert foresaw a time after the machines rose up to destroy us all, which I'm sure is coming. Then humanity eschewed all technology in favor of like organic drugs and genius math people and religion and shit. Quite the foresight. So then I see this advanced screening and have since recounted like, I've just looked at heaps and heaps of analysis on this, and now I'm kind of a full bottle on Dune and the lore and the popularity of it. So, overall, this is fucking awesome.
Ooh.
I would say it straight up. Okay, now here's the thing though, right? I walked out of this going, look, I don't think the pacing was completely perfect. I think it went like it dipped like sort of again between second and third act. The whole first half of the film, I was like, this is amazing. Like, and what's amazing about the film? I think the best thing about it is that the skill of the filmmaker allows things that would normally might possibly look shit to look amazing. So, for example, there's a scene where soldiers are just floating into the air. And I'm like, that could look hokey and stupid under mm-hmm. someone else's tutela. But this was like, ooh, it was like really, really mind-blowing. And then, not to spoil anything, but
no spoilers,
riding a certain creature, for example, mm-hmm. could look stupid if you think about it. It's like, that would sound like a stupid thing, but it looked fantastic here. So really the triumph is the cinematic end. And I think Denis Villeneuve actually says, he actually got under fire because he goes, I don't really like dialogue in films. For me, it's like about the fucking cinematic experience. I couldn't, you know, people are getting pissed about it, people who like drama. And so, like,
ironically.
I know. But I like that he's straight up about that. He's like, I want you to be fucking buzzed off your feet. And I am. Mm-hmm. So it's still too fucking long, but I understand he's trying to, like, fit in, like, an unfilmable book into a film. So
two films, but yes.
Two films, well, exactly.
Two parts of the same film, probably easily argued.
Right. And I think what I didn't get from the first one, and here's the reason the first one I found, like, you know, less engaging. It's because he's doing all the heavy lifting in that first one. Mm. He's trying to tell you about the idea, right? And then this one here, he even said it. He was on Stephen Colbert, and he said, the first one was just like, I'm trying to get all that done, and now I'm free to give you a kind of an action film in places, mm-hmm. you know? And the fact that this is essentially the story of a false messiah, which is what it is, and I kind of understand now that it's like about how easily large populations are manipulated and how you can convince yourself you're the hero, especially men. Those kind of deeper themes kind of made it more fun, more interesting.
It's densely thematic.
Yes, which is kind of cool. So yes, I loved it, Paul. It's not perfect.
No.
But nothing ever is.
Nope.
But for a movie that lasted 7 hours, I was relatively okay with it. And it ended really well.
Yes.
What do you think?
Yeah, pretty boring. This might be a very, very boring review because I don't have much to...
I've still got questions, so don't worry about it.
Much to argue with you there. I think we have a very similar reaction to it. I think it's a very good film. I don't think it's the bee's knees and the greatest thing ever. And I don't think it's the best film ever made, mm-hmm. a la what it was up until about 4 or 5 days ago on IMDb. I haven't checked.
Oh, was it on
but
top?
It was swanning around with a 9.4 out of 10 on IMDb. It's up until its actual release, whether that has continued... I could look it up, but that would pause the proceedings, and I won't. So it's not that good.
No, it's great. It's not the best thing ever.
But what it really, really is the best epic sci-fi film that we've had probably since Star Wars, right?
I mean...
Since the Star Wars trilogy. Original, let me emphasize here very, very strongly.
Yeah.
Like, is there anything that's comparable?
Do you consider MCU sci-fi?
Not really.
No? Okay. No. All right.
Superhero,
so if you're talking about space operas, yes.
You know, and you're thinking about... Someone might say, what about The Matrix? Well, yeah, the first film is phenomenal, one of the greatest films ever made.
No,
the second film is pretty cool by our books, but we're in the minority. The third film is one of the worst films ever made. So,
is it really? Is that what you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. To drop the ball so emphatically in The Matrix Revolutions is just one of the greater cinematic mistakes ever made.
What do you call this? Sci-fi fantasy?
This is epic sci-fi.
Epic sci-fi.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, it's grand on the most grandiose of scales. We are talking about largely, it all set on one world. And that's where it distinguishes itself from a Star Wars. It's largely set on Arrakis. That's it. There is a couple of bits where it drops out to
the
home world of Harkonnen
or whatever,
and then the home world of the Emperor and whatever. But it's largely set on this one planet.
Yeah.
And it does a wonderful job of establishing everything about this planet and living on it, what it's like for the Fremen and for the interlopers, the colonials. So there's another rich theme
Totally.
And as you said, then this false messiah and how you either, is that destiny then created for that person or that destiny manifesting? Was it meant to be? Did it, you know, did that create it? I think that's all fascinating stuff.
But isn't, okay, we'll get to the spoilers.
most importantly,
yeah,
this film looks 3 or 4 times better than the budget looks.
Yeah.
It sounds astounding.
Yeah.
The soundtrack by Hans Zimmer is some of his best work ever. It's not like listen back to it 15,000 times over like I have with the Dark Knight score, but it's so perfect for what it's depicting. It's so immersive and it perfectly complements the sound design. If this doesn't win best fucking sound effects, whatever.
Anything in particular that you...
Sound editing and whatever the other one is for, which they may have quashed together. I can't remember. While they changed the sound stuff.
Now. Yeah.
The Foley mix. It was so good. So good, and maybe it helps that I was in a good cinema and I watched it, but still, astoundingly good stuff. The technical aspect of this is very, very difficult to follow. I was just blown away. My jaw was agape on several occasions. Some of those, the pyrotechnics in this film, also just wow. There's only one thing that I don't much like, and it's the shield effect. I don't think that looks particularly
well. It was
wonderful.
Barely here.
No one here as much as the first one.
Well, because it was said that you can't use your shields on Arrakis because it attracts the sandworms, and that's why no one really used
it. So, they did in places. But anyway, point is, that whole shimmering blue going to red, I just thought that looked a bit shit.
You don't care for that?
I didn't like it much at all.
It tells the story.
But it's fine. Like, that's a small knock. My bigger knocks are, we'll have to say, for spoilers.
Yeah, totally. I mean, that's a good point. Like, because there are moments here that I remember thinking this at the time. Like, he's had to sacrifice time for certain things that I would have thought he'd spend more on. But then he's used that time on things that I would have thought he wouldn't spend time on. So there was a few decisions here that I'm like, okay, well, I'm interested as to why, how much of that was on the cutting room floor and how much of that was his like forceful decision to do so. So
they leave some big plot threads out of the book, which I make it sound like I've read the book. I haven't.
I was going to ask you, have you read
about it? Halfway through it when I was 11. And I was way too young to read this book when I was 11 years old.
Tough read?
Yeah, it was for me at that particular time of my life, which was about 22, 23 years after June was published.
Mm.
So I came into it too early and I should have waited till later on.
Do you think you'll give it a try?
I don't know. I mean, you know, don't read as much these days because I'm doing this podcast and watching things for it. But yeah, it's 900 pages from memory. The subsequent books aren't anywhere near as long.
Isn't there like 200 books? There's like seven of them or something? Something ridiculous.
I can't remember what the exact number is. And so real Frank Herbert fans, please do forgive me. But I think he wrote like 9 or 10. And then his son with Kevin J. Anderson, who's a notable sci-fi author, sort of took over to wrap things up or finish things up and do prequels and whatever else too.
Because these two movies are one book, right?
The first book.
So then the Messiah one is like potentially the next one.
Messiah of June and then Children of June, I think, is after that. So
good. All right.
So look, the other things I really liked. One, I think the performances here are stellar. Like, there's not a bad performance here among them. Everyone's doing what they need to do. If you can convince me that Timothy...
There. I was hoping you were going to bring it up.
Chalamet, whatever his fucking name is.
Chalamet.
Is a king dick badass.
Yep.
And he can pull Zendaya.
Absolutely.
Then you have absolutely won me over.
No, this is really a big aspect of the film, all right? When Dune happened, right? I buy him as the timid prince.
Yes.
Right?
No worries.
There's no problem there. But then it's like, if this guy's going to be the Messiah, he's going to have to get a lot cooler, a lot quicker, right?
And he does. But it's his performance as well as the writing, as well as the dialogue. He's a good actor.
He is a really good actor, and I can see why he's celebrated. Because I remember talking about, this is the first Dune, he said, okay, so basically it sounds like he wasn't necessarily sure about whether it was a studio decision to use him or whatever, right? And he said when he was doing, I think that scene with the hand in the box in the first one, I think that was either one of his very first few scenes or something like that. And Denis Villeneuve said, when I shot that film, or that scene, after like two or three things, he went, oh, thank God, now I can make this film. Because he realized Timothée.
He can pull it off.
Yes. But, yeah, for him to become from that to this... And making me buy it? Because he's shorter than me by the looks of things, right?
He's fantastic. I think Chani or Zendaya is excellent as well. And their chemistry is really good. That really sells an aspect of this film, which otherwise would not have landed.
I guess it was because I didn't notice it. I wouldn't have sat there going, this is a love everlasting. I didn't think that.
Well, the way things go on the film, and again, being vague for spoilers, I was like... Yeah.
Fair enough. No, there's nothing. Look, there's nothing wrong with any performances here.
Yeah, I think Javier Bardem is great as the religious believing guy. Like, this is the Messiah, and I didn't care what you tell me. He's awesome.
Hispanic Jeffrey D. Morgan. Yeah. He was
bad guy from Skyfall and No Country for Old Men.
That's right. He was cool, but didn't you think though that like from the first movie he was considered this very serious, like spit on the floor kind of thing? That guy.
Oh, he was doing that around other people, but around his own people, he can be himself.
Yeah. And he was like funny. Yeah. Like he was funny.
There was
funny
more humor in this one. And I think
we could have used it.
A good proportion of it landed. Like,
no, it was good. He was actually good.
Two out of every three attempts at humor landed, which is big for a film like this.
I there were actual laughs in the cinema. Yeah,
likewise.
Proper. So that was pretty cool.
And sometimes it was just me and three other people in the cinema laughing. I'm like, ooh, okay. Not like, just like.
No, sniggers. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's what you're hoping for. If you bellow out laughing, it's like, well, this isn't that kind of movie. So I get that. But I think Elvis Presley was excellent.
Austin Butler was good too.
He was like, his star is on the rise, man.
I was just watching him. I haven't seen Elvis and have no interest in watching it, but I did watch. I've started watching Masters of the Air, where he is the second main character, I think, in that show. And he's an impossibly good looking dude.
Do you reckon?
Oh my God.
I think he's a normal looking guy, but he's got a nice lip.
Check him out in Masters of the Air when he's all dressed up in his pilot uniform or whatever else. And he's got the hair bouffant.
Compared to Henry Cavill?
I'm not saying he's better. No, he's not. Henry Cavill's not Masters of the Year.
No, but as a person, we're talking about.
I mean, I'm talking about for a young bloke who he's a good looking rooster.
Is he? I'm sure he's a good looking rooster.
Rooster's the wrong term because obviously he's young. But
is that what rooster means? Older guy?
Yeah.
Is it? I thought it was just dude.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, that's why I've interpreted it. Maybe I'm wrong. He is so, and to see him there here where he has the bald head and he's doing the Harkonnen way.
Oh, no, he's great.
But he's menacing, very menacing. And you believe that anyone who's around him could die any moment.
He's there just completely vicious, like taking out the woman next to him. Like, just, oh, I'm just testing his blade. I'm like, you fucking cunt, right? So
Dave Bautista as well, when he has a moment where he snaps, is very, that made me laugh probably inappropriately.
Now, Dave, there's been some talk about, like, Dave Bautista is like one note because he just yells all the time. And it's like, yeah, but he's supposed to
And then
do
he's
that.
Terrified and whatever else. So, yeah, okay. I mean, but if there's a weak link, that's that. But you don't expect Dave Bautista to be the best actor in a film like this. He's doing his role fine.
He's meant to be the, yeah. And I didn't realize that, is it Fayed? What's Austin Butler's, yeah, I can't remember his name is, right? So he's the Sting character from the David Lynch one. Yes. I'm like, oh my God. And so
I'm kind of interested to go back and watch the David Lynch one now.
A little bit. I've never seen the David Lynch one. I only know that Sting's
in it. I watched
it
when I was 10 or 11, too young.
Oh God. Isn't there a TV show that's been going on
for a while?
There was
a miniseries. Not for a while.
And there's another one coming out later this year of Dune.
Okay.
So I'm like, what? Why are they doing
that? But not built in this universe, right?
No. No. It's completely separate. But I'm like, why'd you do that, people?
Bad timing.
Anyway.
All right. So yeah, I think overall we're very much on the same page. I think the action, we'll talk more about in spoilers. I think the action, some of it was really good. That those wise sort of shots of explosions, whatever, are astounding. Not sure the hand-to-hand fighting was as great as it could be. It's one of my knocks on the film.
We will talk about this in spoilers, but there's one aspect of it which I'm very impressed with, and another where I'm like, why didn't that go longer? So yeah. I get what you're saying. Maybe, yeah.
And then I've got a couple of things about the plot which don't particularly, and decisions to cut things out that really needed to see if they were going to land in the way they wanted them to.
I have questions as well, so we'll get to that.
So let's do that on the other side of this very agreeable review where I barely use the soundboard, but now I will.
You can't handle the truth!
And you can't handle the truth if you don't think this is going to be the biggest thing since sliced bread. I do believe it will make a shit ton of money, and we will get Dune Part 3, which I for one, will welcome with open arms.
Denis Villeneuve said that he said it hasn't been greenlit yet.
No, they're waiting to see how much money it makes.
But he said, it makes sense for me to do a third one. But he's definitely, the way he was talking was like, that's it though, I'm not doing anymore. So if they have to go on to Children of Dune.
At that point in time, he'll have done, what, 7-8 years of his life on one project?
Yeah.
I mean, who would do that shit?
Yeah, but who's the... but we've got to be.
Ninth year of the podcast has
passed?
No, wait, is it coming up to the ninth? Yeah, coming up to the ninth.
Come ninth year of this podcast? There you go. Yeah. Thank you, everyone who's been with us the whole time.
And anyone who's joined us.
And now, yes. Imagine being the director that comes after that, though. We're going to do Children of Dune. Who's going to be the guy? It's like, okay, now you got to fill these shoes. I'd be like, fuck that. But okay.
All right, Wayne. Thanks. All right. Well, it's spoilers now. We will spoil anything and everything about Dune Part 2 and the book. I know the book's been out for 60-odd years, David. So nevertheless, people don't read it and they do watch.
Me in particular. Mm-hmm. So, all right. Let's talk about, you just take your point about the hand-to-hand fighting.
Yeah.
Right. So, now.
It's okay.
Well, there's one thing that's.
But it's not great.
Well, I think it is kind of good to great, though, because like, really? All right, so let me tell you the bits that are great. The end duel
that was the best of the lot.
That was probably some of the best filming of a hand-to-hand I've seen, and I'll tell you why.
Really?
Yeah, and I'll tell you why. Because,
I'll tell you why it's not.
Okay, good.
Not enough long shots, wide shots, seeing what's going on, lots of quick cuts.
Cutty, cut, cut. Yes, true. But the way that it was handled, now if you look at this scene, right, they're doing the, you know, may your blade chip and shatter or whatever, and then they come along, okay, ting, 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 ting. Now, there's a little bit of that going on, and it is fast cutting, don't get me wrong, mm-hmm. All right? However, the way that the camera's positioned, and then there's like, they put them in silhouette against the sky, that was great. It was a very real fight, though. It was just a fast, real fight. Like, and when the only thing that was a bit out of place, but it looked great, was that barrel roll that Timothy Chalamet made. Yep. That was like, oh, good, get flashy. But then after there was like, there's a sort of a bit of a stylish, and then he gets, then Timothy Chalamet's on the floor. I think his name is Timothy. But
whatever.
Yeah, whatever. Timmy.
Yep.
Timmy! So. and he's on
we
the
are
floor.
So mature.
I saw South Park for the first time last night. It was on TV.
Yeah, still a good show.
I know. Anyway. And then he's like, you know, is this your pet? You know, and then there's the second phase of the fight starts. Then what happens is the camera actually positions itself like a dirty over from behind Timothy Chalamet. And then it's just a smack, 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 smack. And it looked really cool. And for some reason, that settled me into, oh, now I know where everyone's doing it and how it looks really good.
Yeah, good. I'm glad you liked it.
But I do have a question.
Mm-hmm.
When the sort of the big stoush happens and there's like a grapple and then Timothy Chalamet gets stuck with his own blade by the looks of things, and then he uses that as a draw-in for the guy and he grabs his knife and then he sticks Austin Butler in the chest.
Not with his own knife, with a different knife.
So he had a hidden knife,
didn't
he?
So this is a throwback to the very, very earliest part of first one where he and Gurney are fighting.
Yes, and then he goes, he's got a separate knife.
Yeah, and he thinks he's won and Gurney says, no, I've got that blade at your dead.
Yes. Now, well.
We would both go into whatever the after.
I thought he pulled out his own blade and then stuck him with it.
Don't think so.
Oh, no, he didn't. I had a good look at it. Yeah. And the handle that he stuck in, it had a metal handle,
right,
which is not his blade, no, which is made from...
They started with two knives.
Did they?
Yeah. Remember? I hope your blade... Didn't they both have
one? No, one blade. Oh, I thought it was... And even Austin Butler said, I need a blade. And the Emperor gave him his sweet
right.
one.
You are right.
So that's a little bit of a cheat.
Well, in the book, right, and I think this also happens in the David Lynch film.
Yeah.
In the book... What's his name? Fayed.
Yeah.
I can't remember. Sorry. He poisons his blade or whatever. So he's cheating anyway.
Oh!
That obviously doesn't happen here.
Oh, and then Timothy Chalamet being one of those Bene Gesserit people. Fayed Ruffa
Hakkinen. Yeah.
Yeah, he can negate the poison because that's his
because we established that earlier in the film too.
And that's what his mum did as well. Yep. Okay, good. All right. That's fine.
Yeah, I thought...
Oh, and the Zendaya, where she rushed and she actually had like this scene where ting, 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 and she took out like five guys and then you see her face. That was pretty well shot as well, I thought.
There were moments. There was a really great one shot where they're attacking the spice harvesters.
Yeah, that was really cool.
And there's this one shot where it's sort of following them all in. And then there's another one early in the battle at the very end after they set off the atomic bombs, which is when they come out of the... There's some good moments, don't get me wrong.
This is so like talking about like kind of the Middle East. This is what this is doing. Like,
well, and you got to give credit to Frank Herbert who wrote this in the 60s. And apparently it was way heavier on the Islamic overtones.
Is it really? Yeah.
I mean, when you think of the names here... Muad'Dib.
Oh no, it's very Muslimy, kind of like absolutely. And in fact, even the fact that the Fremen use like this that rocket launcher thing, right? That's essentially a Stinger missile, and it's known that the CIA gave the Stinger missiles to fucking
Afghanistan, to fight the Russians.
Yeah, and it's like that's what they're using. Like, oh shit, you know, it's like that kind of thing. So
but this was written 15 years before. I mean, I don't know if he's had rocket launchers in the book.
That's what they got the book. Yeah, I don't know.
So anyway, point is that, or 20 years before, probably. The point is that I thought some of the action was great.
Mm.
Other bits I was like, and you know, and they made a decision to not show Gurney fighting
Dave Bautista's
character. I'm like, hang on, you've got a whatever the first one was about 155 minutes, 165 minutes. You've got that length of time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What's that, 310 minutes?
Yep.
320 minutes. And you're not bothering to give us a 2-minute battle scene between those two where Gurney loses, gets cut on the face, manages to escape. That's a bad decision.
No, that's what I was talking about before. He's given like airtime.
Because we're meant to care at the end when
it's
they fight.
It's a big thing. And he's just, that's it, he's done. I'm like, yo, what about a big, like.
And presumably the only reason Gurney lost in the first place is because it was superior numbers or whatever else. Or he was exhausted already. There's no way, clearly, on the basis
of what
we
saw. Yeah, he just walked into it. Exactly. Well, this is the other thing though, right? And that's why, because like Frank Hurt, what's his name? D to the V, right?
That's not.
He gives time to, like, say, for example, when they go and find the atomics, right?
Yep.
He'll put a scene in there where they're looking through binoculars going, hey, there it is. What? It's not there. And there's like his dialogue, mm-hmm. right? Any other director would just turn up. This is where the diatomics are. Yep. You know what I mean? He'll give that scene time. But then this thing here where we're building up to a showdown between the two sort of henchmen. And then it's just over in a second. So it's a really, I wonder how much of it we shot a whole fight, but we couldn't give it to you.
Well, I'm not so much worried about how quickly that Gurney dispatched, what was that guy's name? Rabin in this particular one. I'm more concerned about the fact he had to tell us. Because he just disappears in the first film. You don't know what happens.
Yeah, that's true.
You just don't see him. He's gone.
Gurney?
So he suddenly pops up here and I didn't understand this as well. So the Harkonnens have all this technology where they can scan for the Fremen in any activity, but they can't tell when a rogue fucking smuggler harvester is running around getting all the spice. Yeah. I'm like, okay.
I wonder if that's the book. I wonder if that's in the book.
Yeah, so there were some things here that didn't quite gel for me. The biggest problem I have, though, with the story, if we're really, really fair, can't just be praise. Mm. Is I did not understand beyond one line of dialogue which Charlotte Rampling's leader of the Bene Gesserit gives. Oh, we had to put the Atreides back in their place. They're getting too big for their boots. I'm like, you convinced the Emperor to go after Duke Leto and the Atreides.
Yep.
And that's all we get as an explanation. It felt really weak.
Well, from what I understand.
You put the universe into war.
Well, it's...
But they don't explain it well enough.
It's deeper than that. Like, I actually, from what I gather, and you Dune people out there can correct me, but the Bene Gesserit are... Because there's an undertone here, because all the Bene Gesserit are women,
yep.
and even the bile of the sandworm, the water of the whatever...
The water of life.
Water of life, that is supposed to be... Like, it kills men, so we can't really use a man. But what they did is they created the prophecy of the... What's it called?
The Muad'Dib.
Whatever it is, right? Supposedly this savior who came from outside and yada, 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 and then that becomes this guy.
And they actually wanted Rebecca Ferguson to have a girl.
Yes.
But she wanted to have a boy. Somehow they can control that.
Of course.
And they're like, oh, okay. And then he becomes
the
guy.
The reason she wanted a boy, I think, is because she wanted to please Duke Leto.
Yeah, Oscar Isaacs.
He wanted a man, a boy.
Right.
To take over.
So, in a way.
60s, people. 60s.
60s, exactly. But now here's the thing, though. That whole prophecy was created by the Bene Gesserit to control the masses or to control whoever, especially the Fremen, who are there like.
Yeah, whoever controls the spies controls the universe.
Right. So now they put a guy in there. They engineer Rebecca Ferguson to become the mother, you whatever.
The Holy Mother.
The Holy Mother, right? And then her son to become this, you know, the prophesized whatever, Neo. But there was their lie in the first place. So it's like, what are they? All they're trying to do is sustain themselves and actually place their, you know, get babies from Fayed and this and that, whatever, so they can remain relevant throughout the ages. And then they say to the Emperor, you know, the Atreides house is becoming too strong, mm-hmm. too popular, kill him. But why did then the Duke of that place be their champion? Like, how does this work? That was my problem. I was sitting there going, I don't understand.
It seems like they're hedging their bets by that point in time when they
okay,
go
so
to
Okay, so just in case Fayed was wrong. Okay, yeah. All right. That's a bit
one better. Of them's going to win. Yes. That part I got. But it just still feels like, hang on, you want to ensure, okay, you're extrapolating some bits there which I can buy. And I'm sure the book does a wonderful job of explaining
sure.
their machinations in a way.
It.
But I just thought the film fumbled it here. The fact we're having to talk about it and I'm still not clear. Don't consider myself an idiot when it comes to following plot threads and the
I
like.
Do. But
thank you.
No, I do. Me.
Wayne said very, very subtly as he swigged his red wine there. I do. You're an idiot.
No, I do. I think I do. I consider myself an idiot.
But yeah, there's one line that says, "Oh, well, that's why we got the emperor to do this. And the emperor's an idiot," which seems very odd. But why? He's like a son to me. I don't think he's too popular and whatever. I'll have a word to Duke Leto.
Yeah,
and I'll tell him to get back into line.
I know. Quit letting bitches tell you what to do, man. Well, you're the emperor for fuck's sake. What the hell? I know, I'm like that shit.
And I'm so like, okay, that doesn't really work for me. Oh, he's a jealous man. He likes his power. Yeah, but also he would know who his fucking friends are.
Exactly. And also,
who's more likely to betray him, the Harkonnens or the Atreides?
Exactly. And the fact is, like, you know, what's her name? Fucking Florence Pugh says, like, you know, it wouldn't be the first time he's gotten the Harkonnens to do his dirty work. She says that at the beginning, yep. right? I'm like, but if your almost son is you know, Oscar Isaac, and he's got the most strong army, yes. and he's the biggest gangster in, why would you fucking kill him?
Yeah. Has he made? And we know he's a noble man. Said over and over and over again. There's even a line very early on in the film where Rebecca Ferguson's character says to Paul, "Your father didn't believe in revenge." He says, "Yeah, well, I do."
Yeah, well, that was at the end when Christopher Walken says to him, yep. "You know, your father was a weak man because he ruled with his heart. He ruled with this and that." And like, I guess the point he was making is that a really strong leader doesn't do that. They actually mm-hmm. lead more coldly. That's still not a reason to kill the Khan.
But also doesn't fit with he should be fearful of him.
Yes. So he's I know. So this is an intrinsic
plot thing.
That
whole thing was a bit eh. And that's yeah. why it cannot be a perfect film. And the instigating event of this whole event and what drives Paul upon his road to become eventually this Messiah, even though he didn't want to be,
yes,
it's all come from something that's not explained well enough.
Right. So.
And again, I don't have the benefit of reading the book and I don't get to overlay that and explain it. And I'm sure the book does a better job. I'm talking purely from this 320-minute, two-part film.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Now, here's the questions I have. At the end, when the Emperor comes in his big, chromey globe, thing,
yep.
right? Turns up. Okay, fine. Somehow he's got the Sardaukar. His
elite troop
on the floor. And then the Fremen are like, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to hit him pincer movement, side.
We're going to drop three atomic bombs on them first.
Right, but he didn't do that. What he did was I thought that, like, why don't he just fire at the atomic bombs at the Emperor's thing? Because he said, I need him alive.
Yeah, so that's why they
So what they did was they actually shot to the side and destroyed a spice fucking thing.
I think they were destroying spice.
Which put, like, sand over everyone. And then they got the worms to come over and eat cunts and shit like that, yep. right? So... And I was like, oh, okay, so what they're doing is they're attacking them from different bits. But in the moment when I was watching it, I'm like, who are they fighting? Because the Sardaukar had not dissimilar outfits to the Fremen.
Once they were covered in dust.
Yeah, probably that's what it was. I found that a bit confusing. I wasn't quite sure about it. So I'm like, okay, fine. All right, that's that. And when all this shit goes down and finally he just walks in and slays fucking, you know, Stellan Skarsgård. And he's like, hey, Grandpa.
Yep.
Blam, right? And then
that was a cool reveal. Didn't see that coming.
Yeah, I didn't see that coming either because, like, if he was really related to them, wouldn't one of you be bald or white? You know, like, I don't know, recessive gene, I suppose. then when there was that duel with Fayed and he was doing his birthday duel and there's two drugged Arrakis people.
Oh, yeah, back on which was another visually stunning sequence.
Now, I was sitting there going, wait, is this a flashback because it's black and white? I've since learned that what Denis Villeneuve was that he shot it in IR, infrared kind of camera.
Right, yep.
And he said because the sun in Geatus Prime, or whatever that place is called, yep, with a Harkonnen homeworld, is a certain way, and it makes the light look like this, and it's black and white, and it looks more stark because they are white and black.
Also starkly contrasting with what we've seen on Arrakis the whole time.
That's what he said. He said, I couldn't have two desolate,
yeah,
things without it looking different, which is a really good call.
Yep, agreed.
Cool. And so the final thing I thought was, all right, now that at the end of the film, he's like, okay, I beat the fucking Sting guy, and now...
Did you not refer to him that way again? Whatever. Elvis, he beat Elvis.
He beat Elvis, right? A little less conversation, a little more action. And so he then goes, okay, I'm going to...
Suspicious minds.
Exactly. We could do this for a whole hour. We won't. Right? And then he goes over to the emperor and he's like, I'm going to bust a cap in your ass. And she's like, no, no, if you bear his life, I'll marry you, whatever.
Yeah.
And then Bran from Goonies goes, hey, yo.
You mean Thanos?
Thanos, yes. Like, so Thanos goes, hey, yo, all the great houses say we refuse to accept, right, your extension. So now I'm like,
and
wait.
Paul says, okay, lead them to paradise.
Right, which means fuck everyone, yeah, and eat my balls, right?
Yep.
So now.
Probably not in that order.
Oh, yeah. Right, you have to eat the balls first. So what happened then, Paul? So now, because he already said, if you guys don't fucking fuck around with me, I'm going to destroy all the spice and then everyone can suck a dick. But they go, we refuse to fucking, recognize your ascendancy. So he goes, taking them to paradise. And was now did a war start? Because he, yes, just walks off.
Yeah.
Did they fire on people?
Well.
Wouldn't they fire on him?
I have to assume that all the great houses didn't turn up with their thousands of millions of ships of armies.
They're just people. There was just a few ships.
The convoy ship there.
But did they fire on him? No, right?
No. So then,
because he said that shot spice mine, bitches.
Yeah, A, they got spice mines, but maybe he goes on to destroy spice. I don't know. But they are lifting off to fight. So the Fremen now, remember there are millions of them because they have vastly underestimated the number of Fremen that are on Arrakis.
Because the south side is uninhabited, yada, yada.
And that is now Paul's army.
But they don't have any ships, do they?
Well, they took the ships from whoever, from all the Harkonnen ships and I guess the surviving Atreides ships. If there
was
any.
Oh, look at that. Oh, because they was all chilling on the island.
Yeah.
On the planet.
Yep.
So now they're going to use Harkonnen shit to fight everyone else, wow, even though they've never really used it before.
That's a good question.
Uh-huh.
Very good, uh-huh, question.
Okay. All right.
Now, that is the subject of the next book, Messiah of Dune. Now, a couple of things that are worth mentioning, which I've read about that are different from the book. So Chani and Paul have a kid named Leto the Second, I think.
Wow.
After Paul's dad.
Jared, yep.
He gets killed by,
yes,
the Harkonnens.
And I believe the thing that they replaced that with was the bombing of the thing to make them act. Because in the book, that's what made them act.
Yeah, and then Chani's friend gets killed by the Harkonnens. She gets caught. We don't even see, there's nothing. We didn't even see get caught. Suddenly she's just kneeling between them,
yeah,
all.
Yeah, and then he supposedly, yep, flamethrowers her, but you don't,
you
see
don't
it.
You don't see it. And then that's, look, that's, this is a personal me thing. I don't take any score off for it. I would love for this film to be a bit more adult and show a bit more blood and guts.
Is it like a PG? It's not a PG.
It's probably, well, I wouldn't surprise. It's probably M here.
Probably M because he's killing fucking
women. It's PG-13 though. You don't see any,
yeah,
blood and gore, really, do you?
I don't have a problem with that so much. It's more that I need to, because the Harkonnen were plenty bad guys.
Yeah, it was pretty obvious.
Oh, and here's the other thing. You know the big fat Harkonnen dude, like Stellan Skarsgård?
I didn't understand how he operated and how he got poisoned in the first one and then...
Well, what happened
And
was,
then he lost, he shed his, what, did he have a tail? What the hell was going on there?
Ah, so I found out that, because in the first one, when he rose above, I thought, yep, oh, he's mystical, he can fly. No, he's using some sort of apparatus to do that.
Right.
Because he's such a fat cunt, he can't move.
Right.
So he has to use, he has to float around with
this stuff. Whole time I thought, like, he's in this... He's more than human or less than human.
Well, apparently he was cursed or has some kind of problem because someone fucked with him because he did some shit to someone back in the day. These Dune people are going, what the fuck? But like he's got some condition that was put upon him by maybe the Bene Gesserit. I'm not sure, right? Okay. And that's why he's all fucked up. But now he's just got tubes coming out of his asshole and then that's...
Well, he almost dies in the poisoning and then after that...
Because he used the thing to levitate away from it and he only was half poisoned or something like that.
Which is fine. And then we get that sequence where Fayed kills... Apparently, they didn't say this. I don't think they did. That he'd already killed 99 gladiators in the rink.
Yeah, but they're all drugged.
Yeah, exactly. Except the one, the guy that wasn't. And like, oh, this is different. And then, yeah.
Mm. It's a lot of that stuff.
All right, look, I think probably talked enough about...
We talked for a fucking hour on this Dune. Thing.
Does that help you out there, Chef Ben? Not June, Dune.
How you doing?
Brian, what are you giving this as a final score and anything else you want to say to wrap this one up?
Okay, so the score seems to be... Oh, look, I'm impressed. 81.
It's not 2 weeks in a row. 81.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was arming and arming between 81 and 82, but I'll just for the shits and giggles. I'll also give it an 81. So it's 2 4 stars from us here at The Countdown. Obviously, that's high praise indeed in our particular world. Get out and see Dune Part 2, Dune Part 2 on the biggest screen that you can and the best sound system You will not be disappointed. Unless you hate epic sci-fi, in which case, steer well with the fuck clear.
Most def.
All right. If you want to let us know what you thought about Dune, you can head on over to our Facebook list community. Links in the show notes where there is a thread there. As I promised last week, or the week before, we'll start doing this each week for people to talk about it once they've seen the film. Keep it light for spoilers the first few days, and then it is a free-for-all. So don't read it if you haven't seen the film. And if you want to let us know what you thought about the film, you can do so by email at thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com, on X at thecountdownpc, like and follow the show on Podbean where we host, and check out the website, thecountdownpodcast.com, for links to everything else, including our Patreon, Wayne. It's been a pleasure. My name is Paul.
My name is Wayne.
And this has been The Soundboard.
Vindication!
When everyone says you're the Messiah, it turns out you actually are. We'll catch you next time.
I've got to crack a piss cunt.